I don't want you to buy a new club unless it improves on what you already own. Don't waste money, right? So you test that equipment for consumers, because I knew that if we put the money first versus the consumer first, it wouldn't work. And that's why it really pisses me off that YouTube reviews even exist. Rick Shields hitting 5 shots with the driver and hitting and eliminating all the bad ones, telling you, hey, this driver is good or it's bad based on my 117 mile an hour swing speed, which, by the way, the driver that performs best for 117 might finish 27th for a guy that swings 87 miles an hour. It has nothing to do with how a golf club actually performs. And you don't know that unless you've spent 2 decades doing this. I don't care what the brand name was on anything. Don't even pay attention to it. All I'm doing is which one does the job the best for the intended purpose.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, Mr. Beach, thank you for taking a little time here on a Friday morning. During Masters Week as well, I should mention. I've been following my golf spy for a while. I'm a club junkie, as is my co-host, Andy. And love what you all do. And I was reading your bio on the website and was just really, really impressed by like the way that you know, kind of expressed that it's more than just a business to yourself. What kind of led you down this path of starting the company and just getting into golf equipment testing? Was it like a passion for it, or how did it all start?
Yeah, it's a long story. I mean, back growing up, I wasn't a big golfer. My dad got me into the sport. I was baseball, football, basketball guy. And if you read that bio, you might've heard a funny story. Like, all my buddies played golf and I was getting ready to go for football season and I was the quarterback, and I don't know why they convinced me, but I also played baseball and I dipped skull straight back then. They're like, hey man, like the football coach wouldn't let us dip at all. And the golf coach didn't care. All my buddies were like, hey, you know, you can go out there and dip. That coach doesn't even know what you're doing all day when you're playing golf. You're just out there practicing. I don't know why that convinced me to go try out for the golf team, but it did. And luckily I made the team. And the rest is kind of history for playing golf. In regards to getting into the business, I had a business mindset. I never planned on working for somebody. My father ran a business, so I was exposed to it. And basically, I would always shoot him ideas for businesses. And I was a young kid, so he would shoot him down. He was a smart guy, so he'd be like, "Ah, keep plugging away, but you know, not yet." And in the mid-90s, the internet was just starting to happen, and I was walking up the fairway of the 18th hole at his club, and I looked at the pro shop, and I don't know why I had the vision, but I said, I want to start the first internet e-commerce golf shop, you know? And he was like, that's a good idea, and that's all I needed to hear from my dad. So I put everything into it, started during college. I convinced my advisor to allow me to start my first company. And I was trying to be the very first online e-commerce golf business, but I ended up being the third. There were some big guys like CBS was into it. There was another big one called Chip Shop Golf, and then mine. And during that process of owning the first e-commerce shop, I started designing clubs for some manufacturers. And I had a patent and a couple other things. And I got to see kind of behind the green curtain of how the golf industry worked. And what I noticed was, for a business that was all about integrity or an industry, I got to see a lot of dirty things going on behind the scenes. And one of my mentors was deeply connected with one of the largest golf publications at the time. And I got to see how that business was really run. And it was run basically on ad dollars, period. Meaning it was marketing over performance. The industry had forgotten about the consumer. I saw a disconnect between just trying to sell product to golfers and actually trying to help golfers, right? And it immediately just hit me. I had sold my other business and was looking for something else to do. I did a focus group study with golfers to ask them what they wanted. And what I noticed was they were tired of buying new equipment every year, being told that newer was always better. And there needed to be a better model. So there was no consumer reports of golf at the time. So that is what the goal was. It was to basically destroy Golf Digest model about making everything about ad dollars. And I wanted to put the consumer first, not the dollar first. And that was the start of my golf spike. So really just putting, we call it power to the player. And that just means putting the power back in the golfer's hand to make the right decision on what they should buy and actually trying to help them get better. Meaning, if you own a club that works really well for you, I don't want you to buy a new club unless it improves on what you already own. Don't waste money, right? So I'm actually trying to save golfers billions of dollars. I'm not trying to help them spend billions. That's the goal.
Yeah, man, I wish I would have found out about you guys a lot earlier in my golf career. I would have saved a lot of money at this point. I feel like I just go to the different golf shops. I got a local store here, Second Swing. I do a ton of my own testing. But yeah. You mentioned a really interesting point. Like a lot of people that you talk to in business will say, you're actually trying to help people. That's when the really good business idea starts. But for you all, like, how do you actually monetize just the, you know, call it the testing work that you're doing? Right? Like how do you find a way to actually make it a business? Is it through the ads or, you know, like how do you find a way to do it every day?
Yeah. So when I looked at when I went into business to do this, I spent a year and a half building a pretty strategic business plan for it. And what that looked at, or part of what that looked at, was who was not being served. And what were the business models that were out there? And the business models that were out there in the publication world, like Golf Digest, Golf Magazine, had gotten put so many eggs in the advertising basket that when a competitor came along, like the internet, they had put so many eggs in that basket that when the companies that kept their lights on started moving ad dollars to online publications, they were SOL because let's say you had an advertiser that made up 20% of your revenue, your bottom line, and you lose that advertiser because they're going, hey, we're going to move our money over here that's better spent. If you're a publication that loses 20% of your revenue, theoretically, you've got to get rid of 20% of your staff overnight, right? That is not a long game business model, in my opinion. So it wasn't diversified enough. So when we first started this, I looked at originally about 17 different ways to monetize this business that didn't go against the ethos of what we were at, meaning don't sell your soul to make a buck on the reviews. The reviews, I spent that all out of my own money. So in the very beginning, I spent about $150,000 a year buying all the equipment in order to test that equipment for consumers, because I knew that if we put the money first versus the consumer first, it wouldn't work, right? So great question. Now, how do you make the money if you're having to spend $150,000 a year to test equipment? That's not a sustainable, right? So
golf clubs ain't cheap.
No, they're not. So, you know, I will say this. We have some secret sauces that I think how we go about monetizing that I won't talk about, because I think some of our competitors would figure those out and maybe monetize their site in a strategic way like we are. I will say this. We have about 15 to 20 million people, depending on the year, come to our website a year. Okay. Ads, not from manufacturers, but just based on your search habits, are served on, you know, through Google ads on every website you can imagine. Well, we do get paid on those, right? So those aren't ads from Callaway and Titleist, TaylorMade. They're just ads based on, if you're searching for dog food, it's going to serve you a dog food ad maybe in one of the articles. Yeah, and when you have 15, 20 million readers, that has a compounding amount, right? And that serves a lot. We have licensing. So no different than Good Housekeeping or Consumer Reports, if somebody wins the best driver of the year, they can pay for a seal to have the most wanted seal on there. We have a Japanese division. My Golf Spy Japan, that we have revenue through that. We have our own store that sells our own products. We take donations from our readers for people that we've helped find products and save, you know, strokes off their rounds. There's a multitude of ways. So we're never going to want to put too many eggs in the advertising basket, though, because the world is going to always evolve and change. And over time, the people that have put all their revenue eggs in the advertising basket have been SOL when a competitor came in.
Yeah, you guys are doing it the right way, man. Like, you start with the consumer and all of a sudden good things happen. Like, switching from the, call it, business side to the contesting side. What's the right way to put this? Like, how do you guys, one, when you do your testing, you actually, you know, put all the data together, just more than just, you know, grabbing people and hitting the ping driver and seeing what's right. And if it's a secret sauce, I don't want to ask too much, but, you know, when it comes to the actual testing component of it, what all goes into that process? How long does it take? You know, let's say all the new drivers are out for the year and you guys are going to hit the 10 drivers, right? Like the Cobra, the Ping, Titleist, the TaylorMade. How long is that actual process of getting the data? And then also, to take it a step further, does it change from the level of golfers, and are the level of golfers that you're having tests change as well, or is like everybody is French or everybody a 10? How do you get the differences between level of play?
Yeah. So once again, back to the origination of the business, if you're going to be the Consumer Reports of golf, you have to come up with testing protocols that actually produce statistical significant data, meaning data that can be, if you were to take that exact same test and run it again next year, you can have confidence that the results at some level would be the same, like an 80 to 90% confidence interval. Called statistical significance, right? So if that is your objective, to have the most comprehensive testing, first thing you need to do is go out and find, talk to all the manufacturers about how they've test clubs, right? So I flew around the country and had meetings with all of them on, let's see how you do testing. Let's see how you do testing. And let's just take driver testing, because it's driver testing is completely different than wedge testing and completely different than putter testing. So what you're trying to do is first individually look at a category, drivers, and then look at that club, how golfers hit those, and go, okay, what are we trying to define? You're trying to define what club performs best, not what golfer is the best, meaning you have to separate the golfer's ability and the golf club's performance, okay? And in order to do that, you have to hit a shit ton of golf shots, okay? Literally.
They got to go up heel, they got to go up the toe, they got to go up high, they got to go up low, right?
Yes, and why you have to do that is because golfers have different angle attacks, different tempos, different swing speeds, and golf clubs perform differently across the entire face, okay? So if we were to just to do a robot test and hit dead center on every driver, that's, first of all, robots can't swing. They don't have joints, they don't have tendons, they actually don't swing like humans. So you can't use robots for a lot of reasons. But also, if you were just doing dead center shots, almost all clubs perform identically when dead center struck. But where golf clubs are getting better and designers and R&D is getting better is on those mishits, which every golfer mishits. So which one is going to penalize you the least on your mishits, okay? But then you have to also dive in to understand that some people just want distance. Some people just need forgiveness. Some people just need accuracy. So when you go into a test, you have to, it's really complicated. I mean, I wish you could fly down and see the whole process, because you can't test a heavy club right after a light club, because that could positively or negatively influence you if you just swung a really heavy club. If you went from one that had a center of gravity that was really low to one that was really high, once again, it's going to affect one that's 44 and a half inches versus one that's 46. Also, humans have a diminishing returns, meaning they can only swing about 70 to 80 times before you start to see their performance drop off. So you have to take that in consideration. You have to use the exact same ball. You have to use the same temperature, the same dew point. All these things eliminate variables, which is what you're trying to do, to then find out what is the best club. And then let's say you have 20,000 shots to look at in a database. We've built algorithms to determine what was a mishit by the golfer, meaning the lack of their ability for that shot, and then what was actually the golf club performance. And you have to separate those two. And that's why it really pisses me off that YouTube reviews even exist, because Rick Shields hitting five shots with a driver and hitting and eliminating all the bad ones, telling you, hey, this driver is good or it's bad based on my 117 mile an hour swing speed, which, by the way, the driver that performs best for 117 might finish 27th for a guy that swings 87 miles an hour. It has nothing to do with how a golf club actually performs. And you don't know that unless you've spent two decades doing this. And it's so complicated that it's hard to explain to the average golfer what is entailed in actually testing equipment. But it ain't hitting five shots into a net and telling you if it's good or bad. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, it's probably more along the lines of a guy like me that's probably just hit every driver out there, tried every single thing out on the course. And at the end of the day, you got to kind of make a decision on what's best for your game. And along those lines, I was going to ask, like, you've obviously seen all the data out there. I would say a lot of the consensus around the better golfers that we talk to is that we'll just stick with drivers. Maybe just technology in general, but I'll stick with drivers. Like, the actual technology around the drivers hasn't gotten that much better year over year. And this is what people say, is like, if you take the, you know, call it the paying, let's say, 425ST compared to the Max 10K of this year, right? We're talking about, I think that's maybe 2 or 3 years difference between the drivers. What is your take on, like, how much the actual research and development is changing year over year compared to what, you know, we see on TV, which is like, oh, we've found a way to make it better, faster, longer? Is that really the reality, or is it like a marketing point?
Think about it from both sides. If you're a company that's selling product, you have to come up with something to tell people to make them want to buy, right? So they're going to, but think about it like this, and not just with golf clubs, but cars or refrigerators or anything. Products develop evolutionary, not revolutionary, right? So things evolve slowly. Very rarely do you see something rapidly change. So for example, let's take TVs when they used to be big and clunky. You're probably too young to remember that, but I grew up with these TVs. But remember, those big TVs just were the thing for a while, and then all of a sudden flat screens came out. Now that was a big jump, right? How long have flat screens been out evolving? Ticking up, right? So golf clubs evolve evolutionary-wise, not revolutionary-wise. No different than any other category or any other product. But golfers are wrong if they think they are changing. So here's my rule of thumb. If all things are equal, meaning you got fit really well for a driver last year, okay? If it's only 1 year removed, we see about a half to 1 yard difference year to year. Okay. But that's pretty significant, believe it or not. Okay. So if you have a fit club that fits you well, you're probably not going to see much benefit if it's 1 year old. If it's 3 years old, you might. If it's 5 year old, you probably will. And if it's more than five, you definitely will. So when we test clubs that are 20 years old, it's almost to the tee 20 yards shorter than a new product. Okay. So yes, the golf club companies are spending millions to try to eke out one more yard. And while the average golfer goes, golfers have long memories. They remember those days of, like, when golf club companies were saying, we're going to gain 15 yards or rocket balls with 17 yards. I think My Golf Spy has killed those ads. Like, I don't think those ads exist anymore because we've proven they're just not accurate. But the fact that they can still squeak out a yard or two, or ball speed of a mile or 2 miles an hour on the toe or heel, like, they're still, it's a cops and robbers game, right? Like, the cops are the USGA and the robbers are the golf club manufacturers, and they're still figuring out really kick-ass ways to give golf. Like, the 430 10K this year is insane. Like,
I think you and I are both playing it. I think I saw your bio. That's what you game.
If you can't hit that club straight, you need a lesson in golf. I mean, when, okay, go play a ping driver 10 years ago. That's not a 430 10K, man. That thing, they figured out something in that club to help a hell of a lot of golf. So every year it evolves, it takes up, and every once in a while you see, like, the rocket balls thing that jumps up where ball speeds are really high, right? But it was in the woods the other 90% of the time.
So then I'm going to lead the witness here a little bit because I've done my research. Can you speak to how some of your testing has actually, more than likely, and I'm almost positive the answer is yes, force the manufacturers to actually work with you to better their product? Has that happened?
100%. So the companies that aren't, don't take, a lot of companies, surprisingly, billion-dollar companies take this stuff incredibly personally, which is unfortunate, right? Because they just get pissed off when their product doesn't perform well. They don't actually want to dive into the constructive criticism that's there. But quite a few companies actually want to understand it. I will give you some cases of clubs that I know were improved for millions of golfers because of our testing. Golf balls, not even a question about it. Golf ball quality stunk. I mean,
I'm going to guess Callaway, I guess TaylorMade.
I would say every factory, the major three factories that are making golf balls, all have the companies now going, you better make sure the quality control on this shit is good because these guys are cutting them open and measuring them out. And before that, no one knew. No one cared about what was inside a golf ball. But now they are scared to get exposed for that. And Callaway 100% got exposed. That was terrible what they were putting out. Quality control was worse than the majority of the smaller brands we were testing. It was piss poor, okay? So golf ball quality control has 100% gotten better for golfers, and that matters on every single shot. End of story, okay? Something on a different end has gotten better is golf bags. Golf bags, when we started testing them 10 years ago, were not very good. Ping has won basically every year of golf bag testing. And now what you see, if you walk into stores, almost every manufacturer is copying the bag design from Ping. Wow. And they've gotten better.
Sorry, I got to ask, how do you test a bag?
I know. I'd love to fly you in and make you watch the golf bag testing.
I'll fly in on my own dime, man. I am so in on this right now. I'm near to
love it. So I'll give you some random things that the average golfer wouldn't know. Most golfers walk into a golf shop, right, and just see a sea of bags, and they usually go towards a color or a brand, and like, cool, right?
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. Ping bags are, the thought that goes into this stuff is incredible. From the zipper, I'll tell you something you would never know. You never want to have a zipper design that you actually have to grab the bag when you zip it to keep the structure of the bag from like caving in. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Because although you won't use that pocket if you have to always do that. Subconsciously, you'll stop. A bag with 14 pockets will only have 2 to 3 used on a poor design because you know they're not very efficient. Two side bags, the side bag on the side pockets on bags, ones that don't zip properly to allow the bag to fully open to get your rain gear in or your big things in. You sticking your hand in and a cheap zipper design, actually slightly scratching your hand, the human will stop going into that pocket. Okay. Having a rangefinder pocket that opens the wrong way, subconsciously, you will stop using that pocket if it's not easy to use. Okay. Actually, the angle, let's say you stack two pockets on top of each other and you don't angle this one like this and this like this, you can't get access to both pockets. You will stop using both pockets. Dividers. If a divider system does not have lining that goes all the way around 360 degrees, they actually go cheap and don't put the lining on the outside. Your shaft will stick through from one divider to another. You will stop using that divider. So there is so much that goes into a bag, a well-designed bag that the average golfer doesn't think about. I'll give you an example. Stitch bag, when they came out with their bag, it was terrible, okay? Golfers bought it because it looked cool. It was non-functional. There wasn't a single pocket that you could get your hand in, but it looked cool, right? I try to have our staff score things on function. We're not going to score things on how cool they look and their price. That's up to you. If you want something that looks cool, go to the third ranked one because it performed pretty well. For example, Skechers shoe 1 years ago. I'm not going to wear a Skechers shoe back then. I'm just not doing it. But I'll go down to the second or third ranked one and go, okay, that still performed pretty well, but I like that Nike one a little bit better, right? So we just want to separate I don't care what the brand name was on anything. Don't even pay attention to it. All I'm doing is which one does the job the best for the intended purpose.
Man, that's why you're like making my day here with how detailed we're talking about testing golf bags. And so let's throw away all of those brands aside. Let's go to like the testing side, how you choose your bag. Even, you know, your testers at your facility office choose their bags. Are you guys strictly based off the numbers for you, or is it, you know, look, feel, there's got to be a little bit of, it's just strictly numbers. You know, they go test whatever's best for worst training speed, or you roll the best, hit the bust.
Our staff has the luxury of having our database that can spit out and tell you this one will drop 1.83 strokes off your round versus the one you're playing right now. You know, not every golfer has the luxury to know that. If I can tell you this club, this lab putter will drop 1.83 strokes off your round compared to the Scotty Cameron you're playing, I don't think you're going to give a shit that it looks like a toilet and sounds like one too. Does it matter? You know, it's
a lot of guys on tour don't care, man. They're all playing.
And we've done 20, you know, I've done 20 years of testing and 10 years of trying to correlate look, sound, and feel to performance. Zero correlation. Zero. So like golfers are crazy that stand over a putter and go, oh, it's got to look good. Bullshit. I've got 10 years of data. Show me yours because it ain't there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, so I'm a big Scott Johnson guy with Decade Golf, and you know his approach to like how you play the game, right, is very much the same. Like he's taken all of the data and all the shots, the dispersions, and says doesn't matter if you think that you putt better, you know, when the ball rolls 3 feet, you're wrong, right? Because if you putt 3 feet by, you're gonna, you know, make 92 out of 100 3-footers. If you putt it 1 foot by, you're going to make 98 out of 100 putts, right? And the data is the data. So you guys seem to apply a very similar way of thinking when it comes to just equipment.
Yeah, I think if we could combine my golf spy with Scott Fawcett together, because the equipment can take you far, but then you've got to take that equipment onto the course and do strategy play too with that same equipment. And that combination of having the right equipment that definitively, statistically, significantly is better, and then a strategy that also is better, is a pretty lethal combination.
Well, so then I got to ask kind of about the, you know, the future of what you guys are either thinking about doing, whatever you can share. You know, there's obviously the component of the equipment, the testing, what it's going to put out. How do you start to, you know, like as a player, right? If I had something that you just described, along the lines of, I know my swing speed, I know my distances, I know all these things. You know, I could send it to my golf spy and say, hey, make recommendations on what I should be playing this year. Then you applied that to something like what Scott does. And, you know, you can spit out kind of like what your average round and handicap would be, assuming, you know, all the data that you have. Like, you have this big, massive database of all this stuff over the years. You know, how do you apply that to the consumer to be able to give them recommendations, or kind of like maybe the future of, you know, calling golf, where people are starting to, you know, take into consideration this data and apply it to their games? Has that been a thought, or is that something like, you know, where you guys are maybe thinking about going next, or is it strictly just the testing and you want to put that out? And, you know, like, how are you thinking about evolving the business that way, if any?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, yes, of course we are. So we do the testing, which, let's take a most wanted driver test, right? It's a good recommendation. You go, hey, there's 50 new drivers out there. My golf spy says these are the top five. I should probably demo those five. It eliminates 90% of the noise. Okay. Then you can go into our head-to-head tool that's on the top of our website, and you can go pick the driver you're playing or the two drivers you're looking at buying, and it will literally just head-to-head those like fantasy sports. Okay. And it will tell you which one's best for you. Or you can go to the system that we built called truegolffit.com, which is, it's like AI for golf club fitting. The way I explain it is, I can fit you better sitting on your ass eating Cheetos than you could going into Club Champion and paying $500 and hitting three drivers with one shaft each. You can't hit all those drivers in combinations. There's too many variables. So True Golf Fit takes all of our data and tells you definitively, based on your swing, which driver will definitively perform best for your exact swing speed, tempo, and angled attack.
Is that a free service or is that a paid service?
Free.
It's free service. Anybody can just go on there right now. And what information do they have? Because I'm literally doing this weekend.
So there's obviously novice and expert. Some people won't know their swing speed, angle of attack, and tempo. Okay. So there is videos on there to try to guide you to find out what yours might be in a general range. So the way I explain it is this. If you have to scratch a lottery ticket and your chance in winning is 1 in 1,000,000, that is literally the odds of you finding the best driver shaft, head, loft, weight, length combination for you. Over 1 in 1,000,000. Okay. True Golf Fit, if you don't know anything about your swing, and we can guide you to at least give me swing speed or tempo or something, can get that down to 1 in 100. Okay. If you know your swing speed, tempo, and angle of attack specifically based on data off of a launch monitor, I can give you 1 of 1. You're going to win every time you scratch that lottery ticket because we have hundreds of thousands of shots with all those heads, all those shafts, all those combinations. So we're basically just taking your information and acting like you were one of our testers. And it is going through all the data for those exact swings for all those different drivers that we tested only based on your information and spitting out which ones were the longest, the straightest, and the most forgiving.
And I can tell you what my Sunday, when I'm going to be watching the end of the Masters, is going to look like. We're going to be on my laptop on True Golf Fit, putting that in there and seeing how close all my testing, personal testing came out. So I'm in the Max 10K. I've got the QI10 Tour 5 Wood. I've got the Ping G430 Hybrid. I play the Blueprint S's and then the TaylorMade MG4 wedges with the. So it's going to be interesting to see what the thing spits out. And now I got to get you going here, Tegan, in a few minutes. Two final questions. The first is, what's just like a day in the life of you look like? I mean, does it involve a bunch of testing? Is it, more running kind of the business and operations? I mean, I just would like to know because it seems like you're just living the dream of a guy who wants to help other golfers and sound like you have, good head on the shoulders and doing all the right things. It's pretty awesome.
Well, I appreciate it. A day in the life of me doesn't look what you think it does anymore. We got, you got to remember when we're putting out this information, it's for consumers, but the industry doesn't want this information out there. So they fight tooth and nail and not have it. So it's a lot of fighting back and forth with manufacturers. It's a lot of legal stuff. It's a lot of business stuff right at this point. We have probably 20 people working here now. So my role has evolved and changed from being the person that is in, just in deep with every single thing from tweeting to sending newsletters to making graphics to somebody that's more trying to, has a vision of what he's trying to achieve and doing that. So it's not as pretty and luxurious as you probably think it is now. But I still think it's a really cool job because at the end of the day, when my kids ask what I do for a living, I think has some integrity behind it. And if I can teach anything to my kids and pass anything on, that's as important or more important to me than what I'm actually doing at this point.
Yeah, man, it truly is awesome. I'll have to follow up with you, after today and all your meetings, try to figure out a time to come answer and see if you all do. So I love it. And the last question we have, it says, Adam, no matter how hard you try, you'll never fill out a golf shirt while spicing or how does that impact your mental game and golf course? From Steven.
I was about to say, I wonder where that came from. Well, look, you always have to have North Stars, right? People to look up to and mentors. And I guess it will always be that carrot that's just a little bit out of my reach. But I'll always be trying to grab at it. And I just look at him as my North Star. So I just tell him I really appreciate it.
I will, man. I know he'll be listening to this too. So he's the one who set us up. Really appreciate you taking some time. Let you go, get on to your rest of your Friday. You recall, I hope we can do something similar to this again, because I would really love to start deep diving some of these testing. And our listeners really love this type of stuff too. So appreciate you taking some time. Hope to see you and meet you in person again soon. And, good luck with everything. And I'll continue to support the guys and what you guys are doing. So say thank you to the team for all of us golfers out there who need this data about what you guys are doing.
Will do. And thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. Y'all have a good Friday.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam. You too, man.
Yeah, man.